At the worship team meeting last week, one of the items that came up and we discussed a bit, and it seems to come up from time to time in pretty much every congregation that I've ever been a part of, was what to do with the offering. Not how to spend it, but what to do with it in terms of the worship service. Where should it be? How do we look at it? Whether in this day and age we even need to take an offering. So, and I'm rather proud of myself about this, I don't usually think about this, I was curious, I wrote a post on Facebook asking input from my friends, many of whom are pastors, and so I said, what are your thoughts on this? And I got a whole variety of responses. One of my friends responded with a picture from Chester Cathedral in England, where he had been recently, that perhaps illustrates a bit of the dilemma we're in today. It says that during the offertory hymn, the altar is prepared with gifts of wine and bread. A collection is taken or texted. You can either give your offering or you can text your offering to the church. And there's if you want to text it, you can do that in pounds. That's right, you can simply text your offering into the church. Others give electronically, and we have provision for that here through Canada Helps. You can find a link on our website if you want to give electronically. So as more and more of our transactions are done electronically, I mean, shouldn't the church catch up? Some churches, and every once in a while we get an offer that you can, you know, get your credit card machine at the church, so you can just pass that around if people want to use that. Some who responded noted that their church doesn't collect an offering during worship, but simply has a box in the foyer where people put their offerings in. In some way, that recollects how offerings were taken in the first church that I pastored years ago, when there was an alms box by the door for people to put their offering coins in as they went out. There's a whole story behind this box. This is a picture of the original church. This box was by the door of the church. And when the original church was torn down, the then custodian rescued this box from the garbage heap where it was found, and he took it home with him. And it was at his house for many, many years until they had an auction. They were moving out and they had an auction. And I bought it because someone had told me what it was. And I thought, well, that should be, you know, shouldn't just go off to some antique dealer someplace. So I bought it, and it was in my possession for a number of years until the church decided they really wanted it back. And so for their 150th anniversary, I believe it was, they bought it back from me. And it now, if you go to their website, it appears in almost every picture that they have on their website. It's one of their main historical artifacts that they have. Well, that's a little sidetrack. I've known churches where members were simply assessed a certain amount, dependent usually on how much land they own, again, in the past. Although some told of current practice where members were required to show their income tax forms in order to determine if they were actually tithing or not. I also recall one church that we attended one time where everyone got up and filed past the offering plates in the front where the pastors were standing watching to make sure that everyone contributed. And they said, well, if somebody beside you doesn't have something to contribute, give them something so that everyone can put something in. One person at the meeting recalled that in some rural churches in the past, the offering was an annual event taken after the harvest. Farmers had their checks in hand. Some people give weekly, others monthly, depending on when checks come in. One interesting response I got to the question on my Facebook post of whether offerings were becoming obsolete was from Elaine, who said, offerings will become obsolete only when reading a sermon at home replaces listening to one with gathered believers. Perhaps the most impassioned response came from Lynn Miller, who once served as stewardship consultant for Mennonite Church USA who said, no, no, no. The offering is not a financial transaction between us and the church. It is a moment where we prove to God that we meant what we just sang and prayed and preached. Look at 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. It is as if God is saying, after all our words, show me the money. Interestingly, he later noted in a second response that he now gives electronically through a direct transfer and just says thank you when the plate is passed in front of him. So how might we think about this? I'm sure that you all have opinions as well. One of the interesting things to note is that we actually have a rather detailed account in the Old Testament of how the children of Israel were supposed to bring their offerings to the priest, the account that we read from Deuteronomy 26. This passage comes at the end of a long list of regulations and instructions, but it's perhaps the most detailed in terms of how it was supposed to actually be carried out. So we heard it. It goes something like this. After you've settled in the land, the people had settled in the land and planted and reaped your harvest, you are to take some of the first of the fruits that you've harvested, put it in a basket, and bring it to the priest. And then when the priest has taken it from you, you are to remember why it is that you are bringing this offering by reciting holy history. A wandering Aramean was my ancestor. He went down into Egypt and lived there as an alien, few in number, and there he became a great nation, mighty and populous. When the Egyptians treated us harshly and afflicted us by imposing hard labor on us, we cried to the Lord, the God of our ancestors. The Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. The Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with a terrifying display of power and with signs and wonders. And he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, O Lord, that you have given me. I'm sure it was something they had memorized. The children of Israel were invited to recall their history as they brought their offering of first fruits. To recite that history was to remind them that once they had been a slave people in Egypt, and God had delivered them from bondage and brought them to this abundant land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And in response, so now, they were bringing their offering. So you might say, well, so what does that have to do with today? We live in a much different time and place. We don't bring our produce, except maybe on Thanksgiving Sunday when we bring food for the food bank. And we weren't slaves previously. And while all that is true, I do think that there are some principles that we can take from this, and perhaps we need to think of some ways to translate that into today. First of all, as Lynn Miller and others pointed out, the offering should not be seen as simply a financial transaction between us and the church. Yes, our offerings help to pay the bills and keep the programs of the church going, clearly. But first and foremost, our offering is a response to what God has done for us in the past and will continue to do for us in the future. We may not have been delivered from slavery, but certainly we can reflect on what God has done for us in the past. But as I thought about it, I thought, well, maybe we have lost something important, namely the reminder of why we bring our offerings to God. Perhaps we need some kind of recital like the ancient Israelites had. I am aware in some congregations that after the offering is collected, it's brought to the front, raised high, and the doxology is sung or a prayer of thanks is given. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here, not necessarily proposing anything, but I'd invite your thinking about that as well. How might we make that more real for us as we collect our offering and say thank you as a response? There is, I believe, something good about a tangible offering.
Well, we don't bring literal first fruits. Participation in some way in the act of giving makes our thankfulness real in a way that clicking a button doesn't, at least my thinking. Craig Morton, a pastor friend in Idaho, suggested that there could be other things put in the offering plate other than money. He said, replace the money in the plate with weekly opportunities for people to be specific about how they will give their lives, not just their money. We used to collect notes from our congregation as to how they were going to give of their life, conversations, volunteering, time with neighbors, etc. Someone else suggested that even if you give regularly, electronically, in some way, placing even a small amount in the offering plate is worthwhile. Giving as an act of worship is saying thank you publicly, where our children can see and learn. It shows a certain commitment and response to God's actions. We shake our heads and perhaps tusk a bit at the 9 lepers who didn't return to say thank you to Jesus for their healing. And yet we too sometimes fall into the habit of taking things for granted and not saying thank you. And as David Lowes points out in his commentary at workingpreacher.org, the one who returns and gives thanks, in a sense, receives a double blessing. The other 9 were still healed, but acknowledging the blessing of healing and saying thank you is like receiving a double blessing. There is something powerful in acknowledgement and saying thank you. But there's one more thing that I want to note from our passage in Deuteronomy, and that is the last line of the passage, which says something that I think we sometimes forget. After they are instructed on how to bring their first fruits and offer them to the priest, the passage then says, "Then you, together with the Levites and the aliens who reside among you, shall celebrate with all the bounty that the Lord your God has given to you and to your house." 2 things I note in that line. First, after bringing the offering, the first fruits, they were encouraged to use the rest of the harvest, the bounty that they had, to celebrate and to live. But secondly, it was not just for their own personal use, but also to be shared with the Levites and the aliens living among them, the foreigners living among them. The tribe of Levi, you may recall, was not given any land. So the Levites did not have a harvest. They could not provide for themselves in that way. And the same was true of the aliens, the foreigners who lived among them. So even after they had brought their offering, the best of their crop, the first fruits in thankfulness to God, they were still expected to share the rest of their bounty with those who lived among them who had little. It was again a reminder, as Paul states in 2 Corinthians, that when we have plenty, we should share it, because the tables may be turned, and sometimes others will need to share with us. It also reminds us, as does the story of the 10 lepers, that we are called to care for those who are on the margins. Jesus was in the borderlands and healed the 10 regardless of who they were. Giving thanks to God can be done in many ways, and we need to be mindful of that at any time. Meister Eckhart, a Middle Ages mystic, said, "If the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough." I don't think that we'll do away with passing the offering plate anytime soon. But as we do so, I encourage us to take that time as we pass it to say thank you, whether you put something in or not. Make it a time for reflection on what God has done for you and for God's people through the years. In that way, it becomes more than simply giving money to the church and becomes indeed a true act of worship.